Vrindavan with the spontaneous loving affection, then Krishna will reveal himself as supreme as Krishna. So Madhavendra Puri appeared in the sampradaya of Madhvacharya. And although all of his previous acharyas were accepting Krishna as an incarnation of Narayan, he was hearing the same verses, but he was seeing Krishna as the original ultimate cause of Narayan. Why? Because he was approaching Krishna in this higher principle of spontaneous love. And therefore Krishna was revealing himself even in the scriptures as Krishna in the same way is the cause of all causes and all incarnations. Please hear another verse to defeat all misinterpretations. This is a verse quoted from the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10 subjects are described. 1, the creation of the ingredients of the cosmos. In Sanskrit, the word is sarga. The first creation by Vishnu, the bringing forth of the 5 gross material elements, the 5 objects of sense perception, the 10 senses, the mind, the intelligence, false ego, and the total material energy of universal form. So Prabhupada often cites that this is the complete composition of material energy within material energy, so we should learn. Created by Vishnu are the 5 gross material elements, the 5 objects of sense perception, the 10 senses, the mind, intelligence, ego, and the total material energy. These are the 24 material elements. Can anyone say what the 5 gross material elements are? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And what are the 5 objects of sense perception? This you will be tested on. You must all know in the next text. What are the 24 material elements? Not only in category, but in detail. The 5 elements, gross elements, are earth, water, fire, air, ether. The 5 objects of sense perception are sound, sight, touch, smell, and taste. The 10 senses, these are called the indriyas. There are 5 knowledge acquiring senses. What are these? I will say it so they can write. And the other 5? The 5 active senses. Write this. Hands, legs. Genitals. let us say, we perceive the beauty of the deity. On the other hand, we may perceive the beauty of some sensual object of this world. So the senses perceive, and the mind witnesses. The function of the mind, let us see, it sees a beautiful sense object. The mind will immediately think, oh, the senses experience it through the eyes, and then the mind thinks, oh, this is very good. This sense object is very pleasing to me. And it accepts what is pleasing, and it is averse to what is not pleasing. I want this, I do not want this. Like for a devotee, when he sees a pleasing sense object, his mind naturally is thinking, oh, I want this very much. And so that impression of desire is created within the mind. But then the intelligence discriminates whether this is good, whether this is bad, how to attain it. The intelligence figures out the ways and the means by which I could best enjoy what the mind is accepting or rejecting. When we see the beautiful form of the deity, the mind thinks, oh, this is very beautiful. The intelligence, how can I serve you? In other words, the intelligence is that faculty which discriminates and which motivates one toward action. Therefore, when the intelligence is subordinate to the mind, one falls into material existence. And when the mind is subordinate to the intelligence, then one is uplifted. See, the mind that is too much addicted to the senses simply want pleasure more and more and more. And the mind identifies with that and craves. Then the intelligence has to decide what is good, what is bad. When the intelligence is a victim to the mind, then the intelligence will simply be figuring out all sorts of clever ways to gain sense gratification, to engage in sinful activities. We find that some of the most intelligent people materially are the most sinful people on earth. They just have tremendous intelligence, but their intelligence is totally being directed by their mind and senses. Now, a Goswami is someone whose mind and senses are always being directed by his intelligence. And of course, false ego is that element which is the finest, the subtlest of all material elements, which causes this eternal spirit soul to identify with material intelligence, material mind, and material sense perception. Therefore, for a devotee, he understands that his intelligence must come from Krishna, from Guru Sadhu Shastra. He gains his information from the words of Guru Sadhu Shastra, and he directs the mind and directs the senses according to what Guru has told him. That is spiritual intelligence. And material intelligence means that faculty of intelligence is not being directed from a higher power, but it's being directed from the lower forces of the mind and the senses. So Prabhupada describes the definition of the word Goswami. Goswami means a master of the senses. Goswami doesn't mean you have no desires for sense enjoyment. It means that your intelligence is fixed in the order of Gurudev. And like the horses, the five senses are considered horses, the mind is considered the reins, and the intelligence is the driver, and the soul is the passenger. And of course, the super soul who's sitting next to the passenger. So, when the real will of the soul and the super soul is dictating to the intelligence, and the intelligence, however difficult it is, takes the reins of the minds and directs the senses, then the chariot of this human form of life goes back to Krishna. But when the soul, the passenger, is being ignored, and when we allow, when the intelligence allows the senses to go wherever they want, the five horses, then one is being led to spiritual destruction. So this is a very, very excellent example of the chariot of the human form of life. If the intelligence is getting its information from Krishna, then however difficult it must be, that good intelligence, through the reins of the mind, must control the five senses, which are compared to horses. That is spiritual life. And material life is when the driver is simply has no control. The horses are simply taking them wherever they want to go, and the reins are simply being led wherever the senses are going. So it's very simple. This is the difference between material life and spiritual life. Intelligence. Where our intelligence is focused. When the intelligence comes from Krishna's words and Gurudev's words and directs the minds and senses accordingly, that is spiritual life. And when the intelligence is simply being exploited, manipulated, and controlled by the fastidious demands of the mind and the senses, that is material life. Goswami means that we are directing our senses according to the intelligence given by God. The word of God is our intelligence. Any questions in this regard? Yes?
What is it that makes somebody attracted to two people? What would appear to be a beautiful sense object comes into the picture? What makes one person maybe attracted to it, another person not attracted to it?
That is previous conditionings within the three modes of material nature, that we have a particular type of consciousness to enjoy and to suffer. Three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are combined in so many ways. And actually, the 8,400,000 species of life are all just different ways that the three modes of material nature are being combined together. And each one has its own particular way, its own particular perception of what is happiness and what is distress. So therefore, according to our previous conditionings, according to our previous past pious sinful activities, according to what we have conditioned ourselves to want to enjoy or suffer, that is how we will perceive the world. Like Prabhupada explains that a hog is very fond of stool. And he explains that there are hellish conditions where to prepare you to be a hog is someone who considers stool the most abominable thing is forced by the Yamadutas to eat stool for countless years until he actually develops a taste for it. Then he becomes hog. And then he likes school because he's been conditioned to appreciate it. Or even in our relative experience in this world, as the first time a child smokes a cigarette, does he like it? Impossible. There has never been in the history of the world a person who liked their first cigarette. It's terrible. It's absolutely repulsive and unnatural. The first time anyone inhales a cigarette, they cough. What is that coughing? The lungs are utterly rejecting this unnatural object, and it tastes terrible when they cough. But because the people around them have made such a social popularity for cigarettes that if you want to be a very, very distinguished person within our social circles, you must smoke cigarettes. After all, people in the movies, the people in the televisions, the people in the magazines, they're all smoking cigarettes, so you must also. So you have to suffer. You have to suffer to develop the taste. But then once you develop the taste, you love it. You can't do without it. Right? How did they, like when we're sitting in a bus, to us, the cigarette is absolutely repulsive, but to the person smoking, it's like nectar. How did he come to that point? He had to, through his actions, he had to condition himself in the mode of ignorance to be able to develop a type of consciousness where he enjoys that. Huh? And on another, in the opposite way, we read of great devotees like Raghunath Das Goswami, how he was chanting lakhs of the holy name of day. Haridas Thakur was chanting 3 lakhs a day. Rupa Goswami is saying, when I chant the name, I want millions of tongues. And then when that sound comes into my ears, I want billions of ears. Huh? And most of us, when we're chanting, we're thinking the 2 hours is almost over. I can almost finish my chanting and go on with something else. Huh? What is the difference? Because when we strive through purification processes to recondition our senses, then we develop a taste for the holy name. So our consciousness is dependent on what we associate with. So whichever modes of material nature we choose to associate with, we will develop that type of consciousness, and we will perceive certain things as pleasurable and certain things are painful. Magrari the hunter, he found the greatest pleasure in seeing animals suffer. Why? Because he was so much associating with his father, who was also doing like that. He conditioned, through that association, he conditioned himself to love seeing animals suffer. Narada Muni, because he was always conditioned by chanting God's name and by serving the Lord, his conditioning was completely different. Although they're both practically identical in quality, jivatmas, it's just a question of the conditioning according to our choice that we choose to identify with. That will determine how we perceive everything in this world. Any other questions? So in essence, we have to learn to condition ourselves through the intelligence given by God. The Word of God is the intelligence of the devotee. He has no other intelligence. His intelligence is surrendered to the Word of God. That is spiritual life. So that is Saraga. Ah, and the total material energy, that is the Mahatattva. That is the 24th element. The Mahatattva is that cloud within the spiritual sky that includes the entire material energy and all of the other elements of material existence. The second principle described in the Bhagavatam is Visarga. That means a secondary creation. That's the work of Lord Brahma in producing all the moving and unmoving bodies in the universe, in the Brahmanda. You see, within each universe, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu gives birth to Lord Brahma. And all of the 24 material elements are in a dormant condition. And Lord Brahma is empowered by Sri Krishna to take all of these 24 material elements, and he organizes them and arranges them into planets, into mountains, into rivers, into the 8,400,000 species of life. So this is called the secondary creation. Sthana is number 3. The maintenance of the universe by the personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Vishnu's function is more important and his glory greater than Brahma's and Lord Shiva's. For although Brahma is the creator and Lord Shiva is the destroyer, Vishnu is the maintainer. We all know that maintenance is the most difficult part of anything that has been created. Nityodita Maharaj can explain to us this, how they worked so hard to create Prabhupada's palace for so many years. And of course, to destroy something is very easy. To destroy something is not very difficult at all. But to maintain something year after year after year is the most difficult thing. Is it not? Just like
How do you create a tree? You plant the seed, you water it. When the tree is grown, how do you destroy it? You just take an axe and cut it in a second. But to maintain the tree is the most difficult thing. To plant takes a few seconds. But to maintain it so that the fruits will grow takes years and years and years of work. You may have maintained, it takes a few minutes to create the tree. It may take 20 years to maintain it till the proper fruits are coming, and it takes about 5 minutes to destroy it. So everything within creation, we can understand maintenance is the most difficult thing, especially because the time factor is always trying to destroy everything. So to maintain something means you have to fight against the time factor. Is that true? So it is very, very difficult. So therefore, of the guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwar, Brahma is the creator. Krishna empowers a jivatma, in most cases, Brahma, to do the work of creation. Krishna expands himself as Lord Shiva. Vishnu expands himself as Lord Shiva for the purpose of destruction. But maintenance is so difficult that Vishnu personally appears himself. Nobody else could do this work. He personally comes himself to maintain. So therefore, sthana is the third element, which means after the creation, after the 24 material elements are created by Mahavishnu, then there's the secondary creation of Lord Brahma, and then Lord Vishnu himself enters into each universe as Kshirodakshaya Vishnu to personally maintain it. Number four is Poshana, special care and protection for devotees by the Lord. As a king maintains his kingdom and subjects, but nevertheless gives special attention to the members of his family, so the personality of Godhead gives special care to his devotees who are souls completely surrendered to him. Poshana is that element, or that, what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu, that I am the father of all living beings, I am equal to all, I am envious of no one, I am partial to no one, but for one who is my devotee, he is very dear to me, and I am very dear to them. In other words, as we approach Krishna, Krishna rewards us accordingly. When we become devotees of the Lord and seek protection of the Lord will always give protection. This is the fourth subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, how the Lord takes special care to protect his devotees. Five is Uti, the urge for creation or initiative power that is the cause of all inventions according to the necessities of time, space, and objects. Uti is, because we are the marginal energy of the Lord, the part and parcel, because the Lord is the supreme creator, we also have this urge for creation. In fact, there are religions in this world, that's their ultimate goal. The fastest growing of all religions in America, if you ask them what is the ultimate goal of your religion, they will say that by surrendering to our religious principles in this way, we will have our own planet, and in our own planet we will have our whole family, our mother, our father, our wife, our children, everyone. We will be resurrected all together, and from that planet we will be able to create universes along with our family eternally. So this is the ultimate goal of their life, is to become creators. And of course, this is why it's the fastest growing religion in America. People are basically very materialistic. They want to think themselves to be God. They want to think themselves to be creators. They want to think themselves as having their own initiative power. They want to think themselves as the cause of the results of their actions, their inventions, according to the necessities of time, space, and objects. So this urge is ultimately coming from Krishna. And uti is that urge that is ultimately coming from Krishna that is empowered within every particular jivatma. And knowledge means to understand this uti, or this urge, is the potency of God within us that is manifesting through us. And false ego is to think that it is our own. Is that correct, Swami? Six, manvantara. The regulative principles for living beings who desire to achieve perfection in human life. The rules of Manu, as described in the Manu Samhita, guide the way to such perfection. So this sixth subject matter of the Bhagavatam teaches the rules and regulations by which we can achieve the ultimate perfection of human life, or love of God. Seven, Ishanukatha. Scriptural information regarding the personality of Godhead, his incarnations on earth, and the activities of his devotees. Scriptures dealing with these subjects are essential for progressive human life. Ishanu Katha means Krishna Katha, means the glorious information that the scriptures are giving of the Lord's various incarnations and activities in his own personal forms and in the lives of his devotees. Eight, Nirodha. The winding up of all energies employed in creation. Such potencies are emanations from the personality of Godhead, who eternally lies in the Karna ocean. The cosmic creations manifested with his breath are again dissolved in due course. Nirodha means the subject matter of how the Lord, in his supreme greatness, his Karana Dakshai Vishnu, how simply by his exhalation he is the supreme destroyer. The Lord Shiva that appears within this particular universe is only a secondary destroyer. But the supreme, ultimate destroyer is Mahavishnu. Nine, Mukti. Liberation of the conditioned souls encaged by the gross and subtle coverings of body and mind. When freed from all material affection, the soul, giving up the gross and subtle material bodies, attains the spiritual sky in his original spiritual body and engage in transcendental loving service to the Lord in Vaikuntha or Krishna Loka. When the soul is situated in his original constitutional position of existence, he is said to be liberated. It is possible to engage in transcendental loving service to the Lord and become Jivan Mukta, a liberated soul, even while in the material body. So the definition of mukti in the Srimad Bhagavatam is pure bhakti, elevation to the eternal spiritual world of the Lord. That is why when Sarvabhauma Bhaktacharya found that verse, he was so much striving for liberation for so many years through his academic research in Vedanta, that when he met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he understood the superiority of devotional service, when he read this word mukti in the pages of the Bhagavatam, he couldn't tolerate it. He changed it to bhakti. From muktipad, he changed to bhaktipad. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw this, he was very pleased in his heart. But he said to Sarvabhauma, but please understand, when the Bhagavatam talks about mukti, it's not your Vedantic idea of Shankar interpretation of mukti. When the Bhagavatam, it's already Artha Kama Dhamma Moksha, it's already kicked out all of these cheating religions. When the Bhagavatam talks about how mukti is his rightful claim, it's talking about the mukti of being liberated from this material world and being given entrance into the eternal loving service of the Lord in the spiritual world. So although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the great feeling of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya when he changed the word to Bhaktipad, he said that you must leave the Bhagavatam as it is and understand what mukti means in the Bhagavatam. And 10 is Ashraya. The transcendence, the summum bonum, from whom everything emanates, upon whom everything rests, and in whom everything merges after annihilation. He is the source and support of all. The Ashraya is also called the Supreme Brahman, as in the Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa Janmadyashayataha. Srimad Bhagavatam especially describes the Supreme Brahman as the Ashraya. Sri Krishna is this Ashraya, and therefore the greatest necessity of life is to study the science of Krishna. This is the 10th, final, topmost subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Ashraya. To understand that Krishna is the supreme shelter of all living beings. Srimad Bhagavatam accepts Sri Krishna as the shelter of all manifestations, because Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the ultimate source of everything, the supreme goal of all. And this is very important. Prabhupada describes that there are two different principles to be considered herein. One is Ashraya. Ashraya means the object providing shelter. And two is Ashrita, the dependence requiring shelter. The Ashrita exists under the original principle, the Ashraya. Krishna is Ashraya, Ashraya Tattva, or Vishnu Tattva. And the Jivatma is always Ashrita. Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam, Yovididati Kamam. We are always subordinate. So even though this is how we make a distinction between the Acharya and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Acharya mam vijaniyam, it says in the Bhagavatam, Krishna tells Uddhava, that know the Acharya to be my very self. There is no difference between Guru and Krishna. Why? Because the divine empowerment of Krishna himself is fully manifesting through the spiritual master. So is there a difference? No. Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. There is no difference in principle because the grace of God, the mercy of God, is fully manifesting through Guru. By serving Yasya Prasada, Bhagavat Prasada. By serving Guru, you are serving Krishna directly. By displeasing Guru, you're displeasing Krishna. So Guru and Krishna are one in this sense. But in this sense, there is difference. But the Guru is always Ashrita, and Krishna is always Ashraya. The Guru is always dependent, taking shelter of Krishna. And Krishna is always that shelter-giving cause of all causes. We worship the spiritual master as good as God. But we are always conscious that he is Ashrita Tattva, not Ashraya Tattva. The Mayavadis, they say their guru is God. And the Vaishnavas also say that the guru is as good as God. What is the difference? The understanding of this principle of Ashraya and Ashrita. Because the Ashrita, the Jivatma, has completely taken shelter of Ashraya, the supreme object of shelter. Therefore, the Ashrita is a transparent via medium for the Ashraya to give his mercy to the world. So in that sense, they are one. But there is always that distinction.
that the guru is never giving shelter. The guru is always taking shelter. And in completely taking shelter of Krishna, he allows Krishna to give shelter through him. The guru, the Vaishnava, can give shelter to no one. He can only do one thing, completely take shelter of Krishna. When he completely takes shelter of Krishna, then Krishna gives shelter through that person to all others. So the Ashrita is always seeking shelter of God, of the Ashraya. And to the degree we seek shelter, to that degree the shelter of the Ashraya can manifest through us. But because that Ashrita is completely taking shelter of the Ashraya, of Krishna, the divine grace of Ashraya is simply manifesting through them. Therefore, the great devotees of the Lord, they never consider themselves to be giving anything. They never consider themselves to give shelter to anyone. They are simply taking shelter of Krishna. And Krishna is giving all. Krishna is giving the grace. Krishna is giving the mercy. They're simply, by taking shelter, they're allowing Krishna to do through them. Does anyone have any questions on this very important Vaishnava principle of Ashraya and Ashrita? Yes, they consider that we are all Ashraya. They do not accept the principle of Ashrita. They consider that temporarily we may take the position of Ashrita. But when we become liberated by the three modes of material nature, we become Ashraya. But in the Vaishnava philosophy, nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam, we are eternally dependent. We are, the jivatma is eternally Ashrita. The first nine categories described in the first nine cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, from creation to liberation, including the Purusha avatars, the incarnation, the marginal energies or living entities, and the external energy of the material world, are all Ashrita.
The incarnation.
Ah. Because they are also taking shelter of Krishna ultimately. The what? The prayers of Srimad Bhagavatam, however, aim for the Ashraya Tattva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. The great souls expert in describing Srimad Bhagavatam have very diligently delineated the other nine categories, sometimes by direct narrations and sometimes by indirect narrations, such as stories. The real purpose of doing this is to know perfectly the absolute transcendence, Sri Krishna, for the entire creation, both material and spiritual, rests on the body of Sri Krishna. So here it is describing that the nine cantos are gradually progressing one to the point of going, of understanding these three sub, these nine subject matters, and in the tenth canto, the thorough explanation of Ashraya, Krishna, the supreme shelter of all living beings, is given. Ashraya janite kahi ena vapratat, ena vera utpati hetu se ashrayat. To know distinctly the ultimate shelter of everything that be, I have described the other nine cantos, categories. The cause for the appearance of these nine is rightly called their shelter. In other words, Krishna is the cause of all causes, so he is the shelter of all other of the nine categories. Krishna eka sarva shraya, Krishna sarvadham, Krishna rasaride sarva vishvira vishram. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the shelter and abode of everything. All the universes rest in his body. And this is a quote from Sridhar Swami's, the original commentator of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In his commentary, he explains, Dashame dashamam laksham ashritharasya vigraham Sri Krishna kyam param dhama jagad dhama namamita. The tenth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the tenth object, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of all surrendered souls. He is known as Sri Krishna. He is the ultimate source of all the universes. Let me offer my obeisances unto him. This is from the first verse of the tenth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, quotation of Sridhar Swami.
Krishnirasvarupa ara sakti praya jnan yandra haya tandra nahi krishnate agyan.
One who knows the real feature of Sri Krishna and his three different energies cannot remain ignorant about him.
So he's going to start giving subdivisions of these three different energies. But in essence, he's Prabhupada in purport is quoting Srila Jiva Goswami, where he explains the three different, the four transcendental features of the Absolute Truth. One is his personality. One is his impersonal effulgence. His potential parts and parcels. And the principal cause of all causes. He compares the supreme whole to the sun, which also exists in four features. One is the personality of the sun god. Two is the effulgence, or the glare of his glowing sphere. That means the rays emanating from the sun. Three is the sun rays inside the sun planet. And four is the sun's reflections in many other objects. So, the sun god represents the personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes. The glare of his glowing sphere is the Brahma Jyoti, the Brahman effulgence. The sun rays inside the sun planet is the internal energy of the Lord. And the reflections are the jivatmas, the reflections of the sun and other objects. So these are the four categories. One is the internal potency, in which the personality of Godhead is enacting his divine lila in the spiritual world. Two is the external energy, in which this entire material manifestation is situated under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to facilitate the independent desires of the conditioned souls. Three is the marginal energy, or the jivatmas, mamayavamso jivaloke jivabhutatam sanatana, who are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And four is the cause of all causes, the source of all of these, Krishna himself. He is the cause, the ultimate resting place of the internal energy, the external energy, and the marginal energy. So in this way, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is explaining that the real feature of Krishna and his three energies, we must understand, he explains. So these are the four features of the Absolute Truth. Are there any questions in this regard?
So the first one you said is the personality.
Yes.
And that you said is the internal energy. And the cause of all causes, which is equal to the Paramatma, that is Krishna himself.
The internal energy is that sphere in which the personality of Godhead is personally reciprocating loving rasas with his devotees. That is the internal energy. But the personality is not within the internal energy. He is the cause of the internal energy, although he is also entering within. He is within and without all the energies. The personality of Godhead is existing both within and without the internal energy, the external energy, and the marginal energy. Huh? But he is, at the same time, the source, the cause. Do you understand?
Yes. Huh? Consider the second one, second category, the sun, example of sun was given.
Yes.
There, the last one is given as a reflection in others. But
that is the marginal energy compared to the marginal energy.
that is given sun rays inside sun. That is internal.
Huh?
Sun rays.
That's internal. Inside.
That's the internal energy. That means within the sun planet, the sun god is performing his wonderful pastimes. Huh?
And the sun god himself is the cause of all causes?
Yes. As far as the sun goes. Yes. Surya Narayan, when we chant the Gayatri Mantra, we are chanting obeisance to Narayan within the sun, who is the cause of all light, cause of all illumination, in whom the entire universe depends. Because the sun god, Surya, he is actually, as you are saying, he is the cause of all causes for the entire maintenance of this creation, is he not? Of this universe. Can anything exist without the sun? There can be no rain. The sun creates the rain.